Hi, welcome to episode 3 of Forensic Forecast. Well, we call it episode 3, but we've now tried 3 separate times to create this episode, haven't we, Simon?
We have. We've not had the most amount of success with it. I think by my reckoning we're up to 3.11, something like that.
Yes, it's like Windows for work groups, isn't it? We sound even more geeky now than we are usually, so we'll leave that one alone. So, I have to explain what's been going on the last few weeks. First of all, as you know, we went on vacation, holiday, whatever, and came back. I did that little Facebook mini-episode for people. And then you've heard nothing more from us, and I'm sure you're thinking, oh my goodness, are they okay? Are they in hospital? Are they dead? Well, unfortunately for you, no. we're still here. My computer broke down, had to take it in for repair, and the kit that I use for recording these podcasts has been giving me some substantial headaches as well. Mostly headaches because I'm smacking my head off the desk several times an episode, trying to figure out why it's not working. But
that's nothing different. You do that all the time at work anyway.
Oh, thank you very much. yes, well, so that explains basically why things haven't been perfect the last few weeks. So we apologise. Simon obviously has more to apologise for than I do. Obviously, it must be his fault. It can't be mine. So,
yeah, because it's all your equipment going wrong, so it must be my fault.
Well, it's connecting to yours. So.
Okay. If you have to blame me, I'll take the blame. It's fine.
All right. Well, Simon, do you want to just say a little bit about about your little experiment last night?
Okay, I don't want to say too much about it because I'm planning on putting a post up about it. But essentially, I remember reading a while ago, I think it was when there was a review of some hard drive drilling machine that had been quoted as saying it could destroy a hard drive a minute or something if needs be. And someone put a post or a reply to that and said, instead of doing that, why not just inject a bunch of soft drink in through the air hole of a hard drive? So I thought I'd give it a try and see what happened, really. And the results of it and everything else to do with it will hopefully be appearing on the Forecast site in the next couple of days.
Yep, you made a little video of it as well, didn't you? And took lots of pictures.
I took a few pictures, took some video. It should be interesting. People get to find out what I look like, unfortunately. But there's
poor souls.
Yeah. I know, but hopefully someone will find it interesting, and I might start a bit of a series of things not to do with a hard drive.
Yeah, I think we run the risk of becoming the top gear of computer forensics if we keep doing experiments like this. So if people are interested in that kind of thing, then reply to Simon's posts whenever he puts them up, and by all means let us know whether you like it, whether you don't like it. We'll obviously keep trying a few little crazy experiments here and there, but it should be fun. I can't wait to see the video myself, to be honest, to see how it all turns out. So, future episodes. We need to talk about what we're going to do in future episodes. Larry Sewell of Guidance Software has been kind enough to say that we can interview him for the podcast. We're going to talk about Encase Lab Edition and that, and how it potentially can really push forward computer forensic work. I've been tinkering with ideas about different things that we can talk about. One such thing would be how to get into the computer forensics industry. Obviously, both Simon and I are graduates that came into the industry, so that's what we wanted to pass on whatever advice we've gained ourselves in that regard, and hopefully it will be a benefit to some people. That's all coming up somewhere down the line, as soon as we've got ourselves a bit more sorted out. But push that aside, people want to hear what our opinions are on the latest news. So what... I already know what the answer is to this. What idiotic, stupid things are we to talk about this week?
Oh, well, there's quite a few things we could talk about since the last podcast, really.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Including the ones we talked about that failed.
We've missed everything now. We've missed all the good news, and we're left with some insane... backwards Texas law that I really hope gets the state of Texas sued, to be honest.
It's going that way, isn't it? For anyone who's not sure of what we're talking about, Texas, the state of Texas, have changed some legislation just, I'd say fairly recently. It came into effect in September of last year, to do with what they term to be an investigation. And what qualifications you need to be able to professionally say you can carry out an investigation. But because of the broad nature of the term, it means that essentially you've got to be a private investigator to carry out any kind of investigation. You've either got to have the, I think it's a criminal justice type of qualification or...
A criminal justice degree, yeah.
Yep. Or you've got to have apprenticed to a practicing and licensed PI for 3 years, and once you've done that, you can carry out investigations.
I love how they specify these kinds of things. Now, one thing we have to say is that this law, as it that doesn't sound unreasonable. What you've said there, okay? Other states have also done similar things. I mean, I think we've got California, New York. I know that North Carolina, apologies to people listening in South Carolina, North Carolina have done it as well. But North Carolina's one specifically, I know the law was challenged by computer forensic investigators there, who said, look, if you turn over all this to PIs, then you're going to kill off our work. We're not going to be able to make a living anymore. And so what they've done is that they've allowed... all these people who basically went in and said, objected to it, they said, well, you go away and you come up with your own set of standards and we'll comply with that. So, I mean, that's fair enough. I can understand that. I think the first real problem with this is that what on earth do private investigators know about computer forensics?
They know very little by the sounds of things. This law wouldn't have been pushed so heavily if they'd have really realised what it would have involved in the end. But,
it's no doubt the PI lobbyist groups that have come up with this.
It's a way of making them some money, it's going to happen, isn't
it? It's a way of making them insane amounts of money, really, isn't it? Money which they can't possibly earn. I mean, let's face it, even if you've been on a couple of NCASE courses or something like that, it's not going to make you an expert overnight, is it?
No.
Just because you happen to have a private investigator license doesn't mean that you're going to be able to perform anything like a proper full investigation of someone's computer or cell phone or even a USB key drive. You know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah, the interesting thing is that it's... they talk about investigations, but what they're essentially meaning is people who will handle things that could be used as evidence in court,
yeah,
and making sure essentially that people understand the process, proper procedures for evidence handling, chains of custodies,
and of course,
and all those kind of things.
Of course, forensic investigators have no idea what all that is.
Oh yeah, well,
I mean, personally, I've been pulled up in court several times for having not bagged something up properly or not written down a serial number of a computer or have turned a computer on before I did an investigation. I'd like to think that most people who work in this industry are familiar with the rules and regulations and suggestions which are provided for us, and that they'll do the sensible thing in those situations.
Yeah, well, you can't get any kind of computer forensic qualification without having to demonstrate some sort of understanding of evidence rules and procedures.
You can't get a job without demonstrating it either.
No. I think they've gone a bit over the top, but I think the craziest thing about this is the broad term of the word investigation and just how that's applied, certainly to even the likes of computer repair shops.
Well, here comes the second stupid point of this particular law. Go on.
Yeah, well, essentially, at a certain point of diagnosing a problem with someone's computer and fixing it or upgrading it or whatever is done, it could easily be deemed by the wording as an investigation and would therefore mean that computer repair shops, even one-man bands, must get this get some kind of qualification to be able to practice and doing what we've been doing for years with some sort of private investigator stamp of approval.
Yeah, so now we're talking about, you know, let's say Joe Bloggs has a computer repair shop around the corner, which is his life, basically. He spends his time there selling computers periodically, but most of the time he's earning his money from computer repairs and recovering people's data from a hard drive from a computer that's, you know, fizzled out or something like that. And so now, that's it. You know, he's stuffed. What's going to happen is that if he continues to operate the way he has been operating, then he stands to face a 3-year prison sentence and a fine as well of around I've seen either $4,000 or $14,000.
Yeah, I think it's a $4,000 fine with the potential for another £10,000 or $10,000
fine. Oh, sorry, a 1-year jail sentence, sorry. I did 3.
Yeah, I think there's an issue where if they go beyond just doing an investigation, there's another part of it which says that if you carry on, essentially, you could get landed with another $10,000 fine.
Yeah.
But the other interesting thing is that if your own computer breaks down and you take it to a repair shop and they're not licensed as a private investigator, you could also be fined $4,000 or spend a year in jail.
Yeah, so but, everyone has to be aware of the law, first of all, which, well, let's face it, how many people are going to be? Not very many. Oh, wait, who would think that if your computer broke down, that taking it to a local repair shop is against the law?
Yeah, it's not something that would cross your mind, is it really? I think they've got to use some extreme sense, maybe not in the way they've created the law, but at least in the way that they set precedent with it.
Yeah.
But we'll just have to wait and see on that one. It's just a very bizarre case and a very bizarre sort of situation.
Yeah. It just, to me, I mean, I'm really hoping that the people like Joe Bloggs and, I mean, Best Buy are probably the biggest losers of all this. I mean, they've got their geek squad, haven't they?
Yeah.
That they send out to people's houses to, you know, to perform repairs or businesses or whatever else. And instantly that kills off that group, doesn't it, in Texas? Because they can't actually go out and do their job. In order for them to do their job, they would have to either take time out and go do a criminal justice degree or spend 3 years as an apprentice private investigator, like you said earlier. I don't know. It just might be me, but is that a practical thing to do?
You wouldn't think so. I know personally for us, if something like this came in over here, even regarding computer forensics, I don't know how we could get by just all of a sudden not working and going and studying for a criminal justice degree. It's not practical. It's just not possible.
Now, I don't want to make it sound like I'm against like quality control, so to speak, of computer forensics, of digital forensics as a whole. Because I am. I'm a fan of that. And I think it would help because it stops these so-called cowboys be able to walk into a place and say, I do computer forensics, give the job to me, and then taking the money, doing a really poor job of something and turning, you know, a rubbish report back over to their clients. I agree that we should be licensed. I'm not disputing that at all. But I think that licensing does not need to come from somewhere like private investigators.
It needs to come from the right sort of source. And I think private investigators have seen an opportunity to get a bit of extra work out of all of this.
Yeah.
And they've jumped onto it. And they've essentially turned private investigators from this little part of your yellow pages or whatever with are you cheating on your wife or is your wife cheating on you type of headlines.
Are you cheating on your wife? Yeah, well, I think they might know.
Yeah, I think they probably would. That's just me getting my wording wrong. It's late in the day. Well, it's not really, actually, but it feels later. But in any case, back to the point, which I've forgotten now. I believe the point was that private investigators have gone for something that didn't have the highest reputation to appearing to be even people who are seeking more of a financial opportunity than they really should have.
Yeah. There's this article I've been reading on Baseline Mag. That's www.baselinemag.com. And this one guy on here, FBI veteran, doing digital e-discovery work for the Norcross group, just comes out and says, it's an ambush. You know, so, you know, people who worked in this field all of a sudden find themselves just wondering, what on earth do I do now? I mean, the other thing which really confuses me, I guess, for lack of another word, is why 3 years under a private investigator? What is that really going to accomplish? I mean,
It would teach them techniques for being able to obtain information in very strange ways, probably.
But let's just take, like, you and I, for example. Okay, we've both been working in the field for about the same amount of time. I've been working in it for 2 years. You've been about a year and a half, yeah?
Yep.
So what we've got then is that I don't know how many cases you've worked on in that amount of time, but as for me, it's been approximately one a week since I started doing this work, obviously discounting holidays and stuff like that. So if I say that I've done round about 90 computer cases, I think that's probably a fair estimate. I don't know what extra benefit I'm going to have from doing that for another year than I already have. I don't know what more. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying I know everything there is to know, but does an extra year really make a lot of difference between you know, being able to go out and to do the work? I honestly don't believe it does.
I think if it's just a case of learning evidence handling and legal procedures and things, that by no means would take anywhere near 3 years to learn.
No, absolutely not.
And I think it could even be like a weekend training course or something. It just really depends on where you draw the line as far as sense goes, really.
Yeah. I don't know, the whole thing to me is farcical. The fact that they've written the law in such a way that it now, well, it just basically cripples everyone, doesn't it? It cripples not just forensic investigators, but anybody who basically troubleshoots a computer, which, I mean, I don't know how it would work for, like, your IT guy and your enterprise environment, for example. But I don't know.
It's one of those things.
I don't think they can't possibly have looked at this properly.
No, if they enforce it as people think they might enforce it, then it's potentially the end of any kind of computing business, essentially, for the state of Texas.
Yes.
I can't see them letting it get that far, but there'll be people now who see these kind of things happen and think, I could be taking my computer business to open a Houston, Texas branch, or I could open something in Nevada or something.
Yeah.
And they would opt for Nevada, wouldn't they? Because there's less of a hassle of these kind of things getting in the way.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's just, I don't know, the mind really boggles at what these people are thinking. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that the PI lobbyists have been in and discussed this with the state legislature. And they've said, oh, that sounds like a fantastic idea. And then they've just taken it on board. And like that guy said, it's an ambush. Because the forensic investigators, down to the computer repairmen, they don't have a clue. They didn't really have much of a clue that this was coming until it hit. And when it hit, that's it. Then what do they do at that point?
And by the looks of it, they look for other jobs.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's easier said than done, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can only imagine that people who've been doing this for 20-odd years, all of a sudden getting smacked with something saying, you now have to go back and do 3 years apprenticeship to a private investigator, at which point, where you'll be getting paid substantially less than you are now. And you just want to shout at somebody, don't you, and just tell them that they're wrong. So here's what I'm suggesting. A call to arms for computer forensic investigators. And whether that's, and I'll include in that people who, data recovery services or anything to do with computers at all. Let's try and get this sorted out. Let's petition whoever it is we need to petition to make sure that this kind of law cannot be enacted anywhere else, and that it's dismantled, revoked, rethought, or whatever, in all the states where it currently is enforced. Because I don't see how it can work. That what we need to do is set up some kind of forensic lobbyist group that will push the PIs, that will go to state legislature and say, this is wrong, you can't do this. We need to change this, otherwise you're going to really cripple this particular industry in your state. And that could mean one of many different things, couldn't it? It could mean, first of all, people without jobs. But more controversially, it could mean that people who use computers in commissioning crimes could just get away with it. Because, first of all, I can't imagine there's anything like enough private investigators in states like this that could take on this kind of volume of work, when there's hundreds and thousands of companies which are set up just to deal with contracts they get on an everyday basis.
Yeah, I was thinking just a couple of minutes ago, what would happen if something like that came into force all of a sudden in the UK? It would essentially mean...
I'd move to Canada, first of all.
For the police. It would mean every computer forensic investigator all of a sudden not being able to do that particular job. And so, as you said, criminals would essentially have free rein to do whatever they like on computers for the next couple of years.
Well, yeah, because they'd be bailed out. They'd have to be bailed out for 2 or 3 years while they got the computer investigated by their own computer forensics department in the police force. There'd be no more subcontracting out. That'd be the end of it then. Unless you want to subcontract out to, someone who's never really touched a computer very much in their life. I don't know. It's crazy. The whole thing. Ooh, let's call to arms. Let's get this taken out. I did see a comment the other day as well by somebody who said that it's a good thing that Texas lawmakers meet once every 2 years. Imagine what kind of crap they'd come up with if it was once every year. So I'm inclined to agree with that.
Yeah, I think it's the same the world over as far as lawmakers go. It's people sit there and just wonder what they can come up with next. And undoubtedly, when they do that, they come up with things that cause trouble for people.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, is there anything else we need to talk about today? What about PTK?
We could talk about PTK. My sum total of experience with that is that I've failed to get it working, but I think you've had a bit more luck with it than me.
Well, a tiny little bit more luck, I think, is probably fair to say. So, okay. Right. Well, basically, if we explain what PTK is, then first of all, PTK is it's basically, if you've heard of Sleuthkit, you've probably also heard of Autopsy. An Autopsy's a browser-based forensics tool which makes use of the Sleuthkit, in which you can perform forensic investigations. Autopsy's good. I'm not going to knock it because I've used it a few times and it's got the job done. But PTK is a new release by Brian Carrier, isn't it? Is it Brian Carrier?
I honestly couldn't say.
The guy who wrote File System Forensics. And basically, it's a better version of it is better than Autopsy. The website is ptk.dflabs.com. And it's actually really, really good. It's like got an indexing engine, a bit like FTK had, as it works, but apparently. But it's based on a MySQL server, so it sticks everything into a database to recover it later. And it's just it appears to be very quick. Now, I've tried setting it up on two different computers now. I've tried it on my Mac, first of all, without much joy, and I got a sneaking suspicion I know why that is. And also on my EPC, which is Linux-based. And on the EPC, it's done all right, and it's got to... I can log in, but I can't do very much else past that, as none of the pictures are being displayed. Now, I think I've got a sneaking suspicion that's probably an EPC problem and not...
It could well be.
Not the software. But I've also tried it on Ubuntu, the latest version as well, 8.04, and I've not been able to get it to work on that either. So, I'd be interested to hear...
Some people have managed to get it to work, but...
I'd like to hear from
obviously
them.
Obviously, we're not the lucky ones, and our own experience with Linux is probably fairly limited compared to some other people.
How dare you?
I know mine is. Mine's shocking. I've got a Linux-based computer as the only one I really use in the house, and I don't have a clue how to use it. which probably isn't the best advertisement for my own personal skills, but I'm sure I'll pick up things as time goes by, but as soon as I have to do anything with command lines, alarm bells start going off in my head.
It's easy to pick up.
Yeah, I'm starting to get the hang of it, and I'm pleased when I manage to get a new application installed and working, and I feel like I've done something very useful. Another thing to bear in mind about PTK is it's in its very early stages.
Yeah, well, we have to. That's the thing as well. Is that is it beta still, or
it's still
is it
yeah
not,
still an
or is
early
it not
beta.
Even reached beta yet? I can't remember.
I'm not even aware it's reached beta. I think it's
it is
0.1 and
yeah,
something or other.
It's 0.1, but it is in beta. So, I mean, that's fair enough. And hopefully, as things go on, it'll progress and it'll get better.
But it does look useful and does look interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm dying to try it, so I'm going to keep persevering and hopefully it'll work before too much longer. Thinking what else there is. I believe that there is also a new piece of forensic video software that was just announced yesterday or the day before. Have I caught you off guard with this one?
You have done. I've been busy the past couple of days.
What? No, you've been at work. I sit behind you. I know exactly what you do. It's called...
Well, you know what I do for half the time when you keep turning round and tugging on the hair and things.
That's very childish. I'd never do anything like that.
Oh, no, of course not. I must be mistaken.
Yes, exactly. So it's called Vid Report, and it's from Sanderson Forensics. And this, too, looks quite good because what it appears to do is that it can go through and it can just pick out screenshots at various intervals throughout the movie. So instead of having to basically sit, well, when you're creating a report or whatever, instead of having to show somebody the full video, because let's face it, the more indecent stuff you can avoid, the better. It will just carve out a screenshot every few seconds or every couple of minutes or something like that, or every scene change, for example, and you can just present them as pictures instead of making people watch the whole movie. So I'm in favour of that. That sounds pretty good, and I think I'm going to have a play with that this week and see what I can get from it.
I think the big advantage of that is for reporting rather than for an investigation. Because you want to be sure that the video is still what you think it might be, and you still want to make sure that you're aware of everything that's in it in case people ask. But as far as reporting goes, now you can give people a bunch of screenshots of it rather than say, here's a disc with an encrypted movie on or something.
Yeah. Well, the other really good thing about it is that it batch processes multiple video files. So all you got to do is just select a whole bunch of different indecent videos from your point of view, and you just say, right, just do a report based on these files. And you don't have to do anything else for that, apart from just say, look, these are the screenshots of this video taken at such and such an interval and of these 50 videos. And it appears to save a hell of a lot of work. So anything which saves me time and saves me the crying over having to watch another indecent video, well, I'm in favour of it, absolutely. And I look forward to giving it a go. Obviously, this tool isn't free, from what I can tell. But if you go to sandersonforensics.com, you can click on products and click on Vid Report, and you've got both law enforcement and non-law enforcement licenses. So obviously, depending on what area you work in, that's what you're going to select. But I'm not entirely sure of the price. I should have really looked this up before. Oh, well, how's that? Law enforcement license is £100. The non-law enforcement, if it loads... is £150.
Oh, well, they're not exactly bank-busting prices, are they, really?
No.
People who are used to spending the money that's necessary for the main forensic software would easily be able to handle another £100 to £150.
You would imagine so, wouldn't you?
You'd think so.
All right.
They don't have a training course that costs about £10,000, do they?
Wow.
I'm not trying to insinuate anything about any of the forensics companies. I just thought if I had a... sort of
are you sure you're not?
Cheap, I might do the same thing.
Yeah, here you go. Piece of forensic software, £20. You won't be able to use it yet, though. You have to come on my training course, and that's going to cost you £20,000.
I think it's a good tactic.
And one that we see employed quite regularly. Right, so Have you got any interesting news for us this week that's not necessarily forensic related?
Well, I thought one that was quite interesting, which is still computer related, but not computer forensics related, although somewhere along the line an investigator will no doubt be involved. A 16-year-old in the UK this week went to check his bank balance one day to find that his balance read more than £2 million.
How old was he?
16.
Interesting.
They describe him as a schoolboy, so he was he's probably still just this year leaving school. He goes and checks his bank account and sees that he's got over £2 million in there, which obviously works out as over $4 million. And so he thinks, hey, great fun. Gets a couple of people to verify that's what it actually says, and withdraws his limit from the ATM machine for that day, which is £300. Goes and buys himself an iPod and some clothes. And the bank eventually realised their error. They sort it out and describe it as an anomaly with the ATM machine. It's a shame they've not described which ATM machine this was, because it'd have a queue going round the block, I'm sure, of people trying to see if the same thing would happen to them.
Wow. Fantastic. Oh, dear. So, does he owe the bank the money back then, or do we not know
technically
this?
Technically, he does at the moment, but I'm sure that's not going to be the case. I think given that he only took out £300 when he had when he had up to £2 million in there, I think they could forgive him that, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing he didn't go into the bank and ask for all the money, because otherwise he would have, you know, that would look rather suspicious, wouldn't it? You can imagine a schoolboy walking into a bank in his school uniform and just saying, I'd like to withdraw £2 million on my account, please.
I don't think they'd get out the door before some kind of fraud squad were there.
That'd be funny anyway. All right.
It's a mistake that we can all hope we encounter at some point.
Yeah, except we hope they don't find out they've made a mistake.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll finish up. I was a bit bored on my lunch break yesterday, and so I made a post on Forensic Focus because I heard somebody ask the question, how many forensic investigators does it take to change a light bulb? Just to see what people's responses were. So I'm just going to read a couple of the responses, because I think that some of them are absolutely fantastic. So the first response was one, but the date and time they did it is likely to be disputed. Let's see, what was it? You should never change a bulb. Always work in the light of an exact duplicate.
Yeah, interesting.
Someone says three. One, to change the light bulb, and a second, to handle the chain of custody and evidence bags for both the new and the old. Plus, you will need someone to maintain the long-term storage evidence locker while the courts decide the disposition of the old bulb.
Yep.
And this is my favourite one so far, right? It says, you can't. The new bulb requires a different dongle and bulb. Version 2 is very slow to produce light. The version 6 bulb from another maker flickers badly. Might as well stick with the old bulb that doesn't work. Or 2, one qualified to change a bulb, but he has to operate under the licence of a qualified welder in 45 of the 50 states. Or, we don't use real bulbs, instead we use paper clips for young bulbs and bulldog clips for adult bulbs. What? I don't understand that one. It's
I don't
bizarre.
Know. But it's you've opened quite the can of worms there, I think. it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
The last one, I think is quite funny as well. If the bulb is off, one member of staff who has been trained to change both bayonet and Edison bulbs will suffice. If the bulb is on, an on-call team of 15 equipped with a torch will be on site within the hour. This team will take notes until the bulb blows, and at this point they will call the first guy. Fantastic. All right, well, I think we're going to wrap it up now.
I think it's probably worth just directing people towards the Forensic Forecast website to check in the next couple of days so they can see my wonderful experiment and my own findings from it.
Fantastic. And that's now available at forensicforecast.com, and that'll forward you to its current place. We're going to try and get that sorted so it's got its own web space before too much longer, as we don't have to interfere with my own family's website at all. Oh yeah, the other thing is that we're planning on doing a small competition for our dedicated listeners. We'll give you details of that next week, just to keep you sweet and keep you coming back. So thank you very much for listening this week. Thank you, Simon.
You're welcome.
I'd say it's been a pleasure, but...
Well, we all know what the real story is, don't we?
Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much for listening. We will talk to you next week. Bye.
All right.